You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org. Everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreeslein. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We appreciate you joining us on this broadcast every week where we talk about all sorts of outdoor topics affecting the state of Minnesota and beyond. We will have Dan Stark from the Minnesota DNR with us a little bit later. We're going to talk to him about the fact that this Friday, May 1st, is the deadline to apply for a bear tag, and he's going to talk about bear populations in Minnesota with us a little bit. Andrew Tree from the Clay Target League also will spend a second with us. We've never had anyone on from that Clay Target League before, believe it or not. That is up and running, and it's a huge deal. It's a big deal. A lot of kids participating. I was actually talking to my daughter about maybe getting involved with that. We'll chat with him a little bit later. We're kicking off the show right now with the one and only Tim Westmeister, who is back in the upper Midwest. Tim, it's good to see you. You had safe travels, and you're back on your big lake.
Yeah, it was a quick trip this time. Usually, you know, I stop along the way, and I usually Lake of the Ozarks. I've got some relatives that live on that lake. The lake was very dirty from rains. The fishing was just terrible. It was windy, so no fishing there. So now I'm up here on Lake Superior, and I'm finding out that the bite up here is really coming on strong. It's going to be a great year for early season fishing for trout and salmon here on Lake Superior, and I'm really looking forward to getting out very, very soon.
Tim, we're just 2 weeks from the Minnesota Inland Waters Fishing Opener. That's on May 9th. Common theme that I'm hearing from guys like Steve Carney and some of my other guide friends, low water across the region. If you want to launch your boat, plan on being prepared for low water at the accesses. Everyone's going to have to be patient with each other and help each other out because low water across the upper Midwest. Is that something you saw on your travels?
Oh yeah. Water is low everywhere. Water up here on Lake Superior, very low. So yeah, it's going to definitely, you know, cause some problems for anglers in boat launching, but once they get out on the water, they're going to find that the fish are concentrated. That's one of the things that low water does, is it pushes fish into the areas where that they have left, because a lot of that shoreline structure is not available to them anymore. So you'll find that the fish are concentrating more. When you find one, you'll find many. So enjoy that part of the fishing. Low water might have some negatives, but it'll have some positives too.
Well, let's get into a serious topic here. Tim, you and I did not talk about it last week. We should knock this out. We had the big vote in the U.S. Senate on the repealing the moratorium on sulfide ore, copper, or nickel mining in the Rainy River watershed outside the Boundary Waters. This was a moratorium put in place by the Biden administration in 2023. Donald Trump campaigned against it here during his campaign stops through Minnesota. There weren't very many campaign stops in Minnesota, but he made it very clear, along with some of his compatriots within the Republican Party, guys like Tom Emmer and Pete Stauber, that he wanted to eliminate that moratorium, dig baby dig, drill baby drill, whatever you want to call it. The vote was very close. It was fairly close in the House back in January. I think it was 214 to 208. Actually, some people thought it was going to be even closer, but it was so that it passed the House, and then it passed the Senate here after a lot of lobbying from conservation groups. I don't know how active you are with some of these groups on social media, Tim, like Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, Sportsman for the Boundary Waters, the Isaac Walton League, many others, were just pounding away on this on social media in the weeks leading up to that April 16th vote. But nonetheless, it did pass 50-49. Josh Hawley down in Missouri didn't show up for the vote. Presumably, if he had, it would have passed 51-49. There was some talk going into it that J.D. Vance might be needed to break a tie vote, but he was not needed in that case. It passed 50-49. The conservation community really has just blown up in the week to 10 days since that vote. You and I haven't talked about it yet. What do you make of it?
You left one thing out of that Republican mantra: drill, baby, drill, dig, baby, dig, pollute, baby, pollute. And that's why everybody's screaming bloody murder right now, is because they know that these sulfide mines are massive polluters, and you're right on the edge of one of the most pristine waterways in the world. And so we're dealing with a situation here where why would anybody in their right mind want to put, you know, a sulfide mine this close to this gorgeous waterway? Now, here's what really bothers me, is that this is all partisan politics. Notice it was all the Republicans that voted to do this. And some of them said, and this was a quote in the article that you have in this week's paper, was that some of these legislators came to these individuals that were trying to get them to vote no. And they said, we know this is wrong, but we have to do what we're told. Now tell me, is that good politics? I thought these individuals were elected to support the majority. And right now, I think the majority is definitely anti-mine in this particular situation. The stupidity of it just goes to show you how bad politics works these days.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisein and Tim Lesmeister kicking off this week's broadcast. Yeah, the quote you mentioned, I think that was from Steve Ranella from Meat Eater that I included in my column this week. You know, a very telling thing about this vote, Tim, was, you know, when it passed in the House, there were a few Republicans that spoke up. Stauber, I believe Ryan Zinke, of all people, Mr. Public Lands, at least he likes to call himself that out in Montana.
Yeah,
maybe a couple others spoke in favor of repealing the moratorium. This time in the Senate, the testimony on the floor leading up to it was Tina Smith, who spoke against it, Amy Klobuchar, who spoke against it, Martin Heinrich, a fantastic public lands advocate out of New Mexico. I don't know, maybe there were some other Democrats that spoke up. But not a single Republican, Tim, stood up to advocate for this vote. None of them wanted to be quoted. None of them wanted, you know, to say anything and be frontal about why they supported this vote. We were hearing that in the hours leading up to this vote, that it was very close, that we even thought we might have the votes to stop this thing. And then we heard the White House twisted on some arms, put some pressure on, and they all lined up and very quietly voted to remove this moratorium and do what their dear leader, Donald J. Trump, told them to do.
It does create some jobs initially. And the problem, though, is those jobs are short-lived. And then what happens after the mine is done basically stripping the land is that they leave a big pile of pollution behind.
And then they leave it for American taxpayers to clean up.
So it doesn't really create jobs. It only creates money that can be used by lobbyists to get these legislators to do their bidding. And I think it's wrong.
You know, Tim, the city of Ely, I believe, just voted here a week or two ago to go to a 4-day school week to save money in the district. We had a letter to the editor a couple of months ago from someone in the health profession in this community of Ely talking about how difficult it is because of the low tax base. So I understand the concern and the need for high paying jobs and a better tax base in that area. I understand, and I hate that this is the choice on this matter. But I know enough about this type of mining. You know, you look into it. It almost always pollutes. Some might say it always pollutes. You look at the Anaconda mine, the Berkeley Pit mine out in Butte, Montana. Read up on that, if listeners, you haven't. It closed in 1982, and in the mid-90s, they had to put hazing mechanisms up around this pit that's still filled with water to deter birds from landing on it, because there were a couple incidents of snow geese landing on that open pit and the acid levels being so high that it was killing them. It was getting into their esophagus and killing them. I believe many hundreds of birds have died after landing on, you know, that open pit out there. And I'm not suggesting that it would be that bad in the boundary waters. Mining has come a long ways from then, from since then. I'm not suggesting that every loon that lands on, you know, a lake in that vicinity on the boundary waters is going to go up in a puff of smoke. I don't believe that. But the cold hard fact is we just don't know. We don't know what might happen. There might be zero pollution and great jobs for Ely, and we all will live happily ever after. I would love that scenario. But I really don't think that's what's going to happen based on what I understand about this type of mining and what people much smarter than me tell me is that there's going to probably be some level of pollution. And, you know, I use that Ron Shera quote in my column, Tim, that, you know, there's a lot of places where we can try to find other economic development, other jobs, but we only got one boundary waters.
Yeah. And, you know, if you want to actually improve the attacks situation up in Ely, then you do need to create more possibilities for individuals to spend money there, use the resources there. And I think that could be done. Have you heard of one example where this type of mining that we're talking about here has ever ended in a situation that was good, that it was non-polluting? I have not.
I have to claim some ignorance on that, Tim. Certainly the opponents to this mine will tell you that there is no example. I haven't done enough personal research, I guess, to validate that. But I certainly know there's a lot of examples out there of it not going right. Anyway, Tim, probably enough said on that topic. I think it's been beat to death, and I think we're going to be talking about it more because I don't think the court fights and I don't think the political fights are over on this matter.
I don't either.
Let's grab a break. Tim, you'll stick around, and we'll talk to you at the end of the show again, like per normal.
Absolutely.
All right, that's our buddy Tim Lesmeister. Thank you to him. We're going to grab a break. We'll talk Bears when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio.
Nonprofit MinFish's popular world's greatest online fishing auction is live this week, April 21 to the 26th. About 70 items are available. Brands like Humminbird and Daiwa, trips with legendary guides, vacation stays to top destinations, and much, much more. To bid, go to mn-fish.com and click on the auction tab. Auction proceeds support the nonprofit MinFish Foundation, the leading organization for Minnesota anglers.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory lengthened forcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20 gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports. Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Unleash the power of the Onyx Hunt app this turkey season and see how it'll become one of the best tools in your turkey vest. Use color-coded public and private land ownership information, tree species, and crop layers to scout from the comfort of your home. Then hit the field using compass mode, waypoints, and multiple base maps to help pin down more gobblers this spring. Use promo code ODN20 to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreisland. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Glad to have you with us. If you like the content of this broadcast, check us out online at outdoornews.com. We are just scratching the surface of all the great content you will find there, or in the print edition of Outdoor News. You can subscribe to both of those by calling 800-535-5191, or again, visit outdoornews.com. You can subscribe to print or digital. We have a deadline coming up this Friday, May 1st, the deadline to apply for the 2026 bear hunting season here in Minnesota. Got a great guest who hasn't been with us in a while. He's from the Minnesota DNR. His name is Dan Stark. He is the large carnivore specialist for the agency. He's out of Grand Rapids. Dan, thanks for joining me. And we were talking a little off air. Spring is unfurling quickly up there, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's right. It looks like we finally broke through and looking forward to some warmer temperatures and some more outdoor activities coming up.
Well, this might seem like an odd time to talk about bear hunting, but we've got the deadline for people who want to hunt bears this fall. Now, the season doesn't start till what is it, September 1 through mid-October, something like
that?
Yeah,
the season starts September 1st and goes through Sunday, October 18th.
The bulk of the bears are taken early in the season, though, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. Typically, we see about 60 to 70% of the total number of bears taken in the first week. Last year was a little unique, and I would say the first half of the season were typically about 80% of the total harvest, and I'm sorry, 90%. And then that second half is quite a bit slower, you know, 10 or 15%. Last year was a little bit different. We had about 25% of the take occur over the second half of the season. Oh. And so that was a little bit different. You know, typically you can gauge the season, you know, pretty well by what occurs over the first week or two and kind of have a good indication of what the final tally will be. But last year it ended up being a little bit higher because of the, you know, extended activity, either from, you know, good weather and hunters out, or maybe bear activity continues because those baits are available later into the season and people had more time to hunt later.
So much of the success of hunting over to bait depends on the natural food sources. It's too early to talk about that here in 2026. I'll probably get back to you on that question here in 3-4 months. The number of tags we've got this year, Dan, is what, 5,330? How does that compare to last year and why is it up or down?
Yeah, the 5,330 is in the quota area, so that area of the state where we limit licenses by lottery. I'm trying to manage the bear population and make sure that we have a sustainable long-term harvest. That increase reflects what we see a growing trend kind of in the southern and western portions of the core bear range. That's been pretty steady the last several years. And so we have an increase of 725 licenses in the quota area over what we were last year. That increase is really only in four areas. So Bear Permit Area 27, 45, 46, and 51 are areas that have an increase this year. The rest of them are staying flat. And we've got areas of the state are just more productive for bears, better food conditions, like you mentioned. Some of those natural foods like acorns really have a lot of influence on the nutrition of bears and their reproductive capacity.
So that's a fairly substantial hike from last year. That's got to be at least 15%. Are bear numbers, is the bear population statewide increasing? It was fairly high, what, the start of the century. Then it dropped, I think, substantially down like 50%. And it's been building back up, right? Do I kind of have that summarized correctly?
Yeah, we saw a decline from the early 2000s to about 2010 of about 30%. And that's slowly been increasing, you know, pretty steady statewide or bear range wide. It's increasing faster in that transition zone than it is kind of in the northern border counties. You know, the border counties just aren't quite as productive with a lot of those natural foods that bears have. So it takes a little bit longer for populations to rebound up there. But we're also starting to see a slight to stable to slight increase in those areas as well.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline with you here. We're talking with Dan Stark. He is the Minnesota DNR's large carnivore specialist. We're talking about the bear hunting season for 2026. If you're interested in participating, you want to apply by this Friday, May 1st. Now then, folks who get drawn via lottery, they're going to find out within a month, like June 1st, and then they've got to buy their license by Saturday, August 1st, and then there potentially could be some remaining licenses, right, that don't get picked up by folks who were selected for the lottery. Those go on sale August 5th. Ballpark, like how many extra permits did you have, you know, on that date last year? Do you know off the top of your head, Dan?
There's usually about 10% left over that aren't purchased by lottery winners. And so those are available to anyone, and they go on sale at noon on August 5th.
Do they go pretty fast? Do they sell out?
Yes, they do. They sell out in less than 5 minutes.
Okay.
So they'll, you know, for example, last year there was about 400 licenses, and yeah, they were gone in something like 3 minutes. And so it's either the first person in line at a license agent or somebody that has all the right information entered and is ready to hit purchase online. So
gotcha.
It goes pretty quick. It's somewhat like ticket sales for a concert.
Can someone get a permit every year, or does it kind of depend on where they're applying, or are a lot of folks building preference points year to year, Dan?
About 25% of the applicants are just selecting preference only. And so last year was the fifth year that we've had over 25,000 applicants. And yeah, it's been a pretty steady increase of applicants over the last decade or so. And that increase covers most of the permit areas. Some of them there's more interest than others. So you kind of have some areas that take at least a preference level 5. So you've had to have applied for 5 years.
Wow. You look at the math there, 25,000 people for 5,000 permits. That's pretty competitive. Is the number of non-residents who are applying, has that been growing, Dan?
The number that apply is about 20% non-residents, but each year only about 12 to 15% of the licenses go to non-residents because I don't think they consistently build enough preference to get there. Mm-hmm. So it's proportional to the number of applicants, but they usually don't get enough. You know, we don't have more non-residents than residents that are actually able to purchase licenses. In the no quota, we do get a lot of non-residents. That's probably 25% of the number of hunters in the no quota area, because you can buy a license every year in the no quota area. And there's still a lot of great places that you can hunt, and success rates aren't quite as high in the no quota. It averages about 20% compared to the quota area, where we've had about 40% success rate. So really the level of quality of the hunt has been good the last several decades.
For folks new to this, they should understand. So we've got the quota zone, which is traditionally northeastern Minnesota, but to your point is expanding slowly westward and slowly southward. Then the rest of the state is no quota zone. But presumably the best areas in the no quota zone are probably along the border of the quota zone. Do I kind of have that right?
Yeah, that kind of ag transition line through Minnesota, you know, is kind of the core of bear range now. It's somewhat shifted a little bit from the north, where bears were a little bit more protected historically and were allowed to increase. And then the population has expanded from there, really, because the transition zone, where you kind of go from the forest to ag landscape, is just more productive from a food condition standpoint for bears.
How many bears do we think we have in Minnesota right now? And what would you guess for a ballpark harvest would be this fall based on the 5,330 permits in the quota zone area?
Yeah, we don't have a bear population estimate, but we do model the population based on the age of bears killed by hunters. And so we're probably somewhere between 12 and 18,000 bears in Minnesota. The overall number of bears killed during the season is highly driven by the food conditions on the landscape. So those natural foods availability really drives that. But we're probably looking at somewhere around 2,000 to 2,500 bears this fall. You know, that's about average.
And Tori McCormick wrote last week, and this is something I've written about a little bit, is we have a little bit of a would you say, the start of a population down in southeastern Minnesota. We've actually had some people use no quota tags a few times over the years to take a bear down there. Is that something the DNR is monitoring a little closer, keeping an eye on?
Yeah, nothing directly where we're out, you know, trying to tag or mark bears and figure out how many are down there, but through some reporting of the public and a website that we have available that people can report observations, there looks like there has been some bears established down in the southeast. You know, not a significant number, but they're definitely there and using the area, and there have been a couple now that have been taken by hunters.
Certainly plenty of food down there. We're talking about acorns, man. You got a lot of acorns in the southeast, that's for sure.
That's right.
Well, the deadline to apply for the fall 2026 bear hunting season, which kicks off on September 1st, is this Friday, May 1st. Get your application in. Go to mndnr.gov. If you want all the details, just go to mndnr.gov and search bears. Dan, any closing thoughts before I let you go? Thanks for all you do to manage this, you know, highly successful carnivore, right? This is one of the most globally successful carnivore species in the world.
Yeah, and that's the goal long term, is to have a sustainable opportunity for people to hunt. And glad there's a lot of interest and sometimes a little bit of frustration from hunters that don't get drawn because of the time that it takes. But I think people that do stick it out are fairly well rewarded and appreciate that opportunity and have had a good experience when they do get drawn.
Thanks for joining me, Dan. Have a good week ahead.
Thank you.
That was Dan Stark, large carnivore specialist for the Minnesota DNR out of Grand Rapids, sharing some insight into the state's bear population, black bear population. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
You fish the same waters year after year, but what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Nonprofit MinFish's popular world's greatest online fishing auction is live this week, April 21 to the 26th. About 70 items are available. Brands like Humminbird and Daiwa, trips with legendary guides, vacation stays to top destinations, and much, much more. To bid, go to mn-fish.com and click on the auction tab. Auction proceeds support the nonprofit MinFish Foundation, the leading organization for Minnesota anglers.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeseline with you for another segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you like the chatter that we have here on the program every week. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions that way. You know what? An event just kicked off this week, and we have never really devoted a segment to the beginning of the season here. We've talked about their championship. They just wrapped up competition week one. It's the Minnesota State High School Clay Target League. Based here in Minnesota, their spring season is now underway, and here to talk to us about that is Drew Try, spokesperson, marketing director there with the Clay Target League. Drew, thanks for carving out some time to chat with me today.
Great to be here. Thank you.
You folks just wrapped up your first week of competition, bearing down toward what, mid-June when you've got your championship events here in Minnesota.
Yeah, well, we just started out competition week one. They've been doing some practice for the last couple of weeks, but we have 11,184 student-athletes on 437 teams here in Minnesota. That actually makes it bigger than both boys and girls high school hockey combined here in the state of Minnesota.
Wow. And is that a record number of participants this year?
It's not quite a record. It's very close. And then we just lost a little bit here and there. Enrollment numbers at the schools are slightly going down. And of course, when enrollment at schools go down, of course, participation goes down a little bit just to follow that pattern.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of the league. It's been around how long now? I remember when it started, but has it been 15, 20 years?
The league started as an after-school program out in Osseo, Minnesota at the Plymouth Gun Club by our founder, Jim Sable.
Yep, and I knew Jim.
So that started in 2001. And then as things kept going, this program became more and more popular. And so we started the first league, the Minnesota State High School Clay Target League in Minnesota in 2008 with just three teams, 30 high school students. And here we are a little less than 20 years later. And we're at 437 teams and well over 11,000 students. So it's grown tremendously.
This has launched in other states too, right? I got the press release about Wisconsin's got a very active Clay Target League in its high schools. How many states are you in? How many participants total? Do you know that?
Overall, we have teams in 41 states as of right now. I would say that in our high school program, which is by far our largest program, we have active leagues in 37 states. Minnesota is the largest, followed by Wisconsin, New York, and Michigan are all the next largest, kind of tied for the next largest.
So tell us about how the season is going to unfold. How many competition weeks are they? And then where are they all headed in terms of the championships?
So the season starts out, we have two practice weeks and then a reserve week. And the reserve week is just to shoot some extra scores in case weather makes it so that a particular team can't shoot because lightning, thunder, rain, something like that. We have that reserve option. So there's 3 weeks of preseason shooting and then 5 weeks of competition shooting. And then the final week is our fun week, which we encourage the athletes to try different shooting disciplines. We encourage parents, even school officials to come out to the range and watch their team and, just try their hand at it. A lot of teams do different things. Some of them will do shoots against the local fire department or the local police department. There's a lot of fun stuff that goes through that last week.
Circling back to the championships, your big event is out in Alexandria every year. Is that correct?
Yeah, our Alexandria event is going to be just tremendous. It's actually 9 days long, and we'll have about 8,400 students over the course of that 9 days. That actually makes our Alexandria Trap Shooting Championship the world's largest shooting sport event by participation.
And then is there a national championship too?
Yes, we do have a national championship, and that's out in Mason, Michigan. That's roughly 3,000 of the best of the best of the athletes across the country. You have to be a very, very good athlete at this sport in order to qualify to register for that event.
And by the way, the website to learn all about the Clay Target League is usaclaytarget.com. So please check that out. You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. We are chatting with Drew Try. He is with the Minnesota State High School Clay Target League, which just kicked off its first week here this past week. They've got more than 11,000 student athletes on 437 teams here in Minnesota that are participating. The growth of this has been absolutely phenomenal. Have some of these kids gone on to shoot at the collegiate level that started out in high school?
Absolutely. In fact, a number of athletes have gone on to shoot in our college program. There's actually a very good large college program here in Minnesota through the MCAC. And then we also have, you know, some athletes, in particular one who's actually going to be on the cover of our magazine next month, and that's Julian Nelson. She's from Ada, Minnesota, and she's actually on the USA Army marksmanship team, and she's got some World Cup wins, and she's potentially an Olympic hopeful next year.
Have any of your kids participated in the Olympics in shooting? Have any of these kids gone on to take their shot on that international level?
Not yet. It's a very small group, and so there's not a lot of opportunities for students, athletes, to go on to that world stage. And that's why we're really excited to see Julia make it to that stage, and, you know, hopefully she can keep shooting as well as she has.
Do some of the kids talk about how participating in this Clay Target League has made them better hunters? I would certainly like to think they're better wing shooters as a result of participating in this.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of students that participate in the league in order to help their hunting skills. I can't say whether it helps them one way or the other, but I can't imagine it hurts them.
Now, I presume it's too late for schools to enroll in the 2026 season, but every high school in Minnesota doesn't have a Clay Target team yet. I presume there's still an opportunity for others to get involved.
Well, there's certainly a few schools out there, but the vast majority in Minnesota have adopted the program, which is great to see. For those that haven't, yeah, you can certainly get enrolled. Now, our spring season is obviously all the way underway, but we do have a fall season as well. So there's plenty of time to get that school set up, get your school approval, and then get enrolled so that you can participate in our fall program.
Well, and not only individual schools, but kids. It's probably too late for this spring, I'm thinking. But like you say, there's a lot of schools have fall leagues. They can get involved with that or plan on getting involved a year from now.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people maybe not realize that their school does have a Clay Target team. Like I said, the vast majority of schools in Minnesota do. It's just a matter of reaching out to your activities director, finding out who the coach is, and then you can see about getting your students involved.
There might be some parents out there who aren't familiar with guns who are saying, it doesn't sound safe. This is actually one of the safest sports there is, isn't it?
There's nothing is safer than zero. And throughout the whole history of our program, there have been no accidents, no injuries, and that's fantastic. Everybody has to have firearm safety in order to participate. As well as with that firearm safety, every team has range safety officers and ongoing safety programs to make sure that all of the students are behaving safely with the firearms. And that's all we can hope for, is that everybody stays as safe as possible.
I tell you what, even if a kid never learns how to break a clay, I think just being out there and learning safe gun practices is worth participating right there. So that's so important for our culture and for, you know, future hunters who maybe, you know, are participating in this league. That's a heck of a track record you guys have there, Drew.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I believe the same, is that it doesn't hurt to have a safe experience with your first experience with firearms. This is a program that really catches a lot of athletes that don't do anything else in school. Mm-hmm. Our internal research has shown that anywhere between 38 and 40% of the students that are participating in our program don't participate in any other activity in school, whether it's Knowledge Bowl or music or choir. They're not doing anything else. And so you can only imagine that this is a group that is underserved in one respect, that they haven't been given an activity that has caught their interest until their school adopted Clay Target sports. And it's fantastic to see how that's worked out for them.
And Drew, I bet all these kids improve rapidly. I bet some of them get out there the first time, and out of 25 clays, they're breaking one or two. And within, you know, a month, they're probably breaking double digits easy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen students that couldn't break a single clay their first time. And, you know, now here, maybe just a few months later, now they're hitting 15s, maybe even hitting into the 20s. It's great to see their progress.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for all you folks do. It's an amazing Minnesota success story that's gone national. We're really proud of the history of this league here, and I was honored to know Jim Sable back in the day, as well as Mr. Nelson there and yourself. So thanks for all you do, and I would encourage folks, go to usaclaytarget.com for more information and get involved and support this league.
All right. Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Drew. Have a good week ahead and a great season. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Spring coho and steelhead are on, and Kins is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports. Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Kins Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle Inertia Plus rotating bolt and factory-lengthened forcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20-gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Your land is your legacy. But keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Everybody, welcome back. Final segment of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerizline. I hope you like the discussion here. If so, read us online at OutdoorNews.com. Or get the print edition sent to your mailbox every week. Call us at 800-535-5191 if you want to subscribe. Or again, you can do that at OutdoorNews.com. Tim Lesmeister here to help me wind down this week's broadcast. Tim, welcome back. Good to see you. Tori McCormick had a piece on steelhead fishing. You see some steelhead guys up there on Lake Superior. It's more about fishing tributaries. I don't know. Are there any tributaries on Madeline Island where you get steelhead running up?
No, but we get them that they run the shorelines here in this early season. So when you're out there trolling for salmon and for lake trout and for brown trout, you'll pick up some splake and you'll get the steelhead as well. The steelhead are basically rainbow trout. And right now they're moving up into the streams up on the North Shore. I used to spend a lot of time up there in the spring throwing yarn flies to those steelhead, and it was always a lot of fun. But you can find some here if you want to get into, like, the Cranberry River. The Brule has got some of the mouth, the Flag on the south side, but the North Shore seems to have a much better run. Not so good here lately. It's getting really tough for these steelhead guys. They're mostly hiking and casting. They're not catching much. And I think that the DNR realizes this and is doing some stocking.
I did a little segment, Tim, one of our shorts on steelhead. I think a lot of people hear that term and they don't understand, you know, what it is. And it's a rainbow trout. Rainbow trout are the most stocked trout in the world. They're the most stocked fish in the world. They are originally from Northern California. A rainbow trout that spends its entire life in a stream is just a simple stream trout. They don't grow real big, but they're fun to catch and they make good table fare. And then you've got naturalized rainbow trout in the Great Lakes that spend their lives in the lake chasing big fords, getting big, mean, tough, really hard fighting fish, and then they spawn in these tributary rivers. But they spend their life in big water, historically the Pacific Ocean, in the Great Lakes. It's Lake Superior or Lake Michigan. Probably the hardest fighting fish pound for pound in fresh water, don't you think?
Absolutely. I love to catch them when I'm casting, and that'll happen sometimes in Shawamigan Bay when I'm chasing smallmouth bass early spring and into the fall. But whenever I'm out trolling, and that's early and late season, like especially in late September and early October, I always run one lure just below the surface, you know, maybe like a foot or 18 inches below the surface. And that's always the lure that I get the steelhead on. And yeah, I tell you what, I have caught 24 and 25, 26 inch steelhead that have put up a fight that is, you know, almost as good as a 32 inch brown. I mean, it's amazing how hard these steelhead fight in their jumpers, and they'll just, you know, wreck all your gear. It's great. They're so much fun. But you got to catch them on the high lure. Most of these people that aren't fishing a high lure aren't getting the steelhead, but I do, because I target them.
It's a great resource. I wish we could grow them naturally a little bit better. I wish Mother Nature would cooperate, but that's the situation we're in. And I'm glad to see the Minnesota DNR doing some more stocking to try to, you know, maintain that sport fishery for anglers out there. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister winding down this week's broadcast. We had the big Minfish Summit out in Alexandria last week, Tim. Eric Morkin covered that, did a great job for Outdoor News. A lot of good topics. They had Al Lindner out there. Sounds like Al's not real thrilled with the early bass fishing season, catch and release that we've got going now. He thinks it's gonna harm the resource.
Yes, he does. He says, wait till you see what it's going to look like in 10 years. I don't think you're going to see any difference at all. That's my opinion. Al is a great angler. He is a wonderful individual, a real thinker when it comes to fish. Dead wrong on this issue. Sorry, Al, I just don't agree with you on this one.
Well, Tim, let's talk about the specific thing you said. And it came up, I think, for multiple species. Catch and release has really blown up. And I think, you know, right now it's one reason that fishing is so good. But, you know, people asking, how many times can you recycle this fish before it starts to have an impact? Do you have an opinion on that question?
Yeah, I do. I don't think that you're recycling as many fish as you think you are. Maybe on these small bodies of water, but, you know, the fishing for largemouth bass, people say, well, we're pulling them all off the beds. No, you're not. You're probably pulling 10% of them, maybe 20% on a small body of water off the beds. You've still got 80% of those fish that have good natural reproduction going on. And Al, you've fished all over the country. You've seen this. You've fished in Missouri, great bass fishing there. You fished in Iowa. You fished in Florida. You fished in Tennessee. You fished every state but Maine. And what you have seen, because I have seen it too, is that there's great fishing in all of these states. And a lot of them have year-round bass fishing. So you're dealing with a situation here where I'm sure you'll have to see how this all comes together over a long period of time. But I think that from what I see based on other states, it's not going to make any difference at all.
I mean, a lot of those states have longer growing seasons too, Tim. But hey, you know, you and I have been arguing about this for a decade.
Yes, we have.
You know, you got your year-round bass fishing season, and I'm willing to give it the college try and see what's going to happen. I, you know, that said, I trust Al Lindner's judgment too, Tim. He's been around. I mean,
I do too. You know, I like giving him a hard time though. He is definitely one of the greatest anglers of all time when it comes to just the sport as a whole.
We've got a forward-facing sonar study going on, and one of the we had the Minnesota DNR John Kempe present some of the results from this creel survey. They've done it on three Brainerd area lakes, Edward, South Long, and Gull Lake. They've been interviewing anglers and finding out, you know, they're using forward-facing sonar. How have their catch rates been compared to anglers who aren't using it? And, you know, the catch rates are higher, no doubt about it. A lot of these walleyes are being released. You know, I guess that's not a surprise. Forward-facing sonar makes anglers better.
Oh, and I was shocked, totally shocked, at how many anglers are actually already using forward-facing sonar. Yeah. And the reason for that is this is not a cheap, you know, sonar package. When you buy forward-facing sonar, you got to invest some money. And I was amazed that we're looking at Gull Lake, 72% of the anglers that they surveyed on Gull Lake already were using forward-facing sonars. That was incredible. Even on the small lakes, it was down around almost 50%. And I said to myself, wow, is this such a great technology that everybody's literally selling off, you know, their children and their animals and buying this because it works so well? But it does show that it improves the catch rate quite a bit. And I think that it's going to definitely mean more success for anglers that use this technology. And hopefully, like you said, they'll understand that they have to pay attention to the resource, practice catch and release.
Well, if I may, I told you so. I mean, seriously.
I'm glad you do.
If it's 70-some percent last year, it's probably going to be 80% on Gull Lake this year. And, I mean, you know, just look at it from the perspective of an avid angler, right? You're out there, you're fishing old school, and you see all these boats going around you with all these guys staring at screens, and they're catching more fish than you are. They're more effective than you are. And, you know, you got $60,000 into your pickup and you got another $60,000 into your boat and all this other equipment. Honestly, Tim, what's another $1,200, $1,500 for a forward-facing sonar unit?
Yeah, you're right about that. And I think that this technology, surprisingly, is very quick to learn. You know, you're looking at the screen, you're going, oh, look, that's an actual fish. And I'm looking at this direction it's at. It looks to me about 20 feet away. I need to move over to that spot because that's where it's at. You know, it used to be in the past, if you wanted to use even a tenth of the stuff that you had on a really nice quality sonar, you had to study the books for 2 weeks. Now you just basically plug this thing in, turn it on, and you've got everything right there in front of you, staring you in the face. It's on auto, and it works like a charm.
Well, and we've talked about this too, also, Tim, that, you know, there's, you know, a growing percentage of younger guys out there fishing these days. Look at the Bassmaster Classic. Young guys are winning that thing. And one reason is because they're totally comfortable with technology like this.
Oh, no doubt about that. If you look at how the tournaments have evolved, it's all guys that are in their early 20s now that really understand not only how to use their technology, but how to, you know, physically catch those fish. When I used to cover tournaments in the past, you had basically two kinds of anglers. You had the guys that really knew how to find fish, and you had the guys that knew how to catch fish chasing those guys around. And it's changed a lot. Now you've got guys that know how to really, are really good at technique and can catch fish. They've got the forward-facing sonar, and they're going out there and finding them too. So it's a whole new game when it comes to competitive angling, and it's all because of the forward-facing sonar.
Quick final thought from Minfish. Tim, looks like the DNR, you know, getting more serious about experimental panfish regs. We're up to 285 waters with special sunfish regulations and 118 with special crappie regulations. I think that's great. I think we need to do more to improve our panfish populations. We've done what we can to, you know, go after these hammer handle pike. And it sounds like some of these experimental panfish regs are working.
And they're talking to anglers. Anglers are saying, wow, you know, we're seeing fish that are in the 14, 15, and even 16-inch range, where before, if you were to catch a 10-incher, you were happy.
You're sunfish, slab crappies there.
Yeah, slab crappies there. And sunfish now, they have really started to look at sunfish as a fish that they need to do something to make sure they get that size structure up. And I think it's great.
All right. Well, Tim, good fishing. We'll talk to you next week. Probably get into a hardcore walleye opener preview, huh?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that was Tim Lesmeister. Thank you to him, all of our other guests. Hope everybody has a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerisnein signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.